Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two, it's Albracht and Kester here on this Friday, a very, very fun Friday. Congratulations to Doug for winning our iced tea and free ring coffee giveaway from HTO. Enjoy that on us each and every day here on Sports Daily. That IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. You've got Shocker Baseball coming up today a little later on the network here. But we're talking NFL draft. We're talking college basketball, Tommy, because we have transfer portal news times two here. So the Ryland Griffin addition to KU, as expected, happens. We'll start there, and then we'll get into K-State's addition that was made, the announcement here just in the last handful of minutes or so. Ryland Griffin comes in. We've talked about him. Alabama, good score, great shooter, around 40%. That's what they need. Proven. They liked him coming out of high school. He gives and fills up possibly KU scholarships if Johnny Furphy does or doesn't come back, and assuming Hunter Dickinson, which, by the way, the draft, or the deadline on the draft thing for Hunter Dickinson is tomorrow night. So I don't know what the hell's taking so long here.
He's going to announce. It's going to be fine.
It's weird.
He was waiting on Griffin. He was waiting on this news. He's going to be the final piece of the puzzle, the final cog in the machine. It's going to be fine.
That's not going to have the same.
It's going to be fine.
If that's really the mindset, that's not going to have the same impact he thinks it will, because everybody already thinks he's coming back anyway. Just get this over with. What are we doing here? But let's just, I'm with you. I think he will too, assuming he does. KU could be done, Tommy. I mean, they lost one of their freshmen, which I missed that news. I didn't even see that happen. But they could be done, because they still have to take a scholarship penalty at some point. So if Furphy doesn't come back, Griffin's there, Dickinson comes back, they'd be at 12. They can just be at 12 and be done with that, you know, restriction. And I think that's probably what they would do, because now you're looking at, you know, really, I mean, let's be real. Like, you're looking at like 10 viable players here, right? Like, you're fine without taking another player on scholarship this year.
I don't think they're done. I think they might have room for one more. And I just say that because I know that there's, you know, still the scholarship situation and everything. But really, the biggest thing outside of shooting that the Jayhawks were lacking this last season was depth. So you can never have enough of it. And I know that there is at least one other player. There might be a couple more, but there's one other player that they've been targeting, and that's Kobe Brea. And he is, I think he's the Dayton kid. And I know that he's got five schools that he's considering. I saw this report earlier today. All five of them are blue bloods. They're the five main blue bloods: UConn, Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, and Kansas. He's considering all five of them. So that could be a potential on the table. I don't know how likely it is at this point, but I do think that they may try to bring in one more player. This Rylan Griffin news, while I think it's expected, I don't think it can be overstated how important it is, because he brings length and he brings shooting and a solid defensive frame to the Jayhawks. You know, I think that knowing that they've been able to land Griffin, AJ Storr, Zeke Mayo, who may ultimately be coming off the bench and kind of filling that sharpshooter off the bench role, and then a guy like Riley Kugel, who can provide athleticism off the bench, all of that, I mean, this is absolutely, in my opinion, a big-time portal win this offseason for Bill Self.
Well, sure it is. He's going to win every portal year. He's just got to get it right. Mayo will be right now. He'd be the backup point guard, too, don't you think? I mean, there's nobody else, unless I'm forgetting somebody. Kobe Brea, the only thing about that is Kobe Brea and Riley Griffin are kind of the same. Right, they'd be kind of the same. They're big guards that can really shoot, and Brea shot 50% from three last year. But I wonder if they were on Brea until Griffin signs, and then they don't need to be on Brea anymore. They're going to have. I mean, right now we're looking at, with the return of El Marco and McDowell, and they're already 8 or 9 deep. And then they have the two other freshmen coming in. I'm not sure. And I know it seems sacrilegious after last year. I feel like they're probably good on depth now. I feel like they're probably okay there. They can always add more. They can always add more. Sure, you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know that they need to, if they're going to have to eat that scholarship at some point anyway. Because at some point next year, you're not going to have Dickinson. You're not going to have Adams. You're not going to have DeJuan Harris. You may need the extra scholarship, and you may rather take it now than later. You know what I mean? Like, it may be more beneficial to eat it this year than it would be next year.
What I do think about the way that they've been able to go get these transfer portal players during this offseason is that it does take pressure, I think, off of KJ Adams a little bit to produce at a high level. I think they're not going to take the starting position, I don't think, away from KJ Adams, but I don't think they're going to ask him to play as many minutes as he played last season or even the season before. I wouldn't be surprised to potentially see a lineup that is DeJuan Harris, Zeke Mayo at the two, Rylan Griffin at the three, AJ Storr at the four, and Hunter Dickinson, assuming he can, the five. So
kind of the
that's
four around one.
That's kind of, yeah, the four wing, you know, four outside,
they've
one
run it.
Kind
I mean,
of.
It's in Bill Self's wheelhouse for sure.
That's kind of something that I could see, you know, from a shooting perspective, something that they would lean on. That probably won't be the starting lineup. I mean, KJ Adams, I don't know if you can take him out of the starting lineup, but I do think that's a viable lineup for the Jayhawks.
Well, it's just they've got to either figure out one of two things: figure out how to successfully use Adams and Dickinson at the same time, which has been hard, or, and here's what I really hope happens, KJ Adams develops a three-point shot this offseason. Like, that's his focus.
Not gonna happen.
That's what he does.
I don't think so.
That's what. I mean, you need to be at what? You need to be able to hit one a game, take two, maybe. Just kind of keep that real, because he can defend the three, I think. I don't think that's a problem. It's just, can he play that position offensively? I don't know. KJ Adams is so good that it's hard to imagine him coming out, but the starting lineup doesn't matter. It's just, how many minutes do you play? We'll see. We got to get the announcement from Dickinson at some point here. I mean, I don't know what we're doing. I don't know why this is taking until the deadline of the draft.
Happen. It's fine.
It's not that it's fine. I don't care if it's fine. I don't understand the point of it. Like, what's the point of this? Come on now.
Does it matter?
Be done with this.
Like, I feel like you're, like, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
It does when you're trying to put a roster together. I mean, the shadow of a doubt's not important.
We talked about it earlier this week. Don't you think that Bill Self knows one way or another what Hunter Dickinson is doing? I think he does, and I think he's known for a long time.
I think he thinks he knows, but until it's done, it's
he
not
knows.
Done.
He knows. He knows, because otherwise he would have been targeting a big in the portal, and he hasn't done that at all. at all. There hasn't been a single big man that has been linked to Kansas in a large way that could be a Hunter Dickinson replacement next season that the Jayhawks have talked to, had serious interest in. And if there is, I haven't seen it. So I just don't, I don't think that there's any concern here. Bill Self and Hunter Dickinson have known what they're doing for the last few months. I'm not concerned about it.
Yeah, we'll know by Monday. I think he's coming back too. I just am annoyed that it's taking this long. That's all. All right. So the other one that is falling into our laps here this morning, you said it was Jeff Goodman reporting. Brendan Housen is coming from Villanova to K-State. So this one's interesting for me because as soon as you said that name, or you sent me that name, I'm like, I think that's the kid from Amarillo who was a wildly successful high school basketball player and ended up at Villanova, which was really cool. But like, we're talking, Tommy, the level of shooter. Now he's, you know, Rylan Griffin's like, you know, athletically ahead, but it's a 6'4 guard who can shoot what, you know, Villanova's coach called one of the best shooters they've ever had at Villanova, right? He had like a video where he made something like 48 straight corner threes. And I think the rumor was that it was more than that, but the video ran out. And so a really, really high-level shooter, right? And I don't know what else he'll be able to do, but if that's your skill set, we know in college basketball, that's a pretty dang good skill set to have and a pretty handy one for coaches to have too. And he's 6'4". You know, you coach up a little defense there and you're in good shape, but this feels like a really good get for Jerome Tang.
Yeah, I think it is. And from a shooting perspective, that's something that the Wildcats need. And I think that they have filled that need, you know, in a big way, I think, with this signing of Brendan Housen. And, you know, I saw just the other day that Arthur Kaluma announcing for the NBA draft. Of course, they won't have Tyler Perry next year. You know, all the different other changes of players leaving, you know, the program. There was a need for quality and consistent shooting, especially from the outside. And it looks like that's what Brendan Housen can do. I don't know if it was a situation where maybe he wasn't, you know, utilized quite in the way that he should have been at Villanova or just kind of growing into that system or whatever, but I wouldn't let the stats fool you. I think Housen is a really good player from what I've been able to read up about him just in, you know, the last little while. So regardless, you know, this is something that, you know, Jerome Tang needed. And I think that from an optics point of view, from an outsider looking in, I think it's important that you're able to get not only quality transfers, but quality transfers from, you know, pretty big named programs, and Villanova historically has been one of them. And so I do like this move. I think that it's important. I don't think that Jerome Tang is anywhere close to being done. I don't think in the transfer portal, but I do think that it's been kind of quiet recently over the last week or so, maybe even a little bit longer than that. I think this is an important next step in the way that Jerome Tang is crafting and constructing this roster for next year.
I mean, there are a lot of games where Housen took 8 to 10 threes. Like he shoots a lot. It's a thing he does, and he does it at a pretty high clip. That's, you know, that is a role that they needed real bad last year because Perry didn't quite do it. And so K-State and
who do they have to do it on the roster right now for next season? I mean, I don't think they really do.
Correct. And it is like, it's just, it's the kind of move that KU tried to make last year, maybe with Timberlake, but it's you're at a much higher profile athlete, right? Because he's coming over from Villanova. And so it makes sense. I think K-State fans will love him from everything I've heard about, you know, this kid. And look, he was playing in Amarillo far after I was there, but I've talked to other people that are working there now, and they're just like, they're really excited, A, to have him back in the Big 12 and get a chance to see him play a little more often. But it feels like a really nice fit. I had no idea he was in the portal. And I had really kind of stopped following tabs on him. I just knew what kind of high school player he was. And here you go. A great shooter coming into K-State. I like it. I think it's a good fit because they're going to have the athletes. They're going to have all that stuff coming in as freshmen and everywhere else. But, you know, they still, this isn't, when I say K-State has a big splash left in them, this isn't the big splash I'm thinking about, but it's a really handy, nice addition. And the type of player who could really elevate things in the right situation, right? If you can become a great shooter like that and you go play for a coach like Tang, who has really, you know, done well developing these players, it's a good fit, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited for both of them. You know, two shooters coming into teams here that we follow that both need shooters, and both of them get those shooters today. What I'm curious about with Rylan Griffin is his role in the starting lineup. 12 points at Alabama, the way that program's rolling right now, you'd think so. And certainly Storr is. So that's five. If it's Adams, you know, if it's Adams, Harris, and Dickinson, that's five. That means Mayo doesn't start. That means the Florida kid doesn't start.
Riley Kugel.
That means none of the, you know, now sophomores start, and none of the incoming freshmen start. That's five. That's what I mean. So you've got now, you've got the two sophomores, you've got the two freshmen, and you've got the other two transfers in Mayo and Kugel. That's six off the bench. Six already. And who's the 12th player then? Clements, I guess. Is it Clements?
Yeah, it'd be Clements.
So I just think it might be advantageous for KU. Again, assuming Furphy does not come back, because that's still a possibility, and at that point they would just take him and then they'd use the scholarship. I think if you're and I like the kid out of Dayton, don't get me wrong. But I think for KU in the big picture, they might be better off just eating the scholarship and getting that behind them. I think with six viable and potentially seven, if Furphy came back, like, that's enough off the bench for me. Because you don't have to have a true backup, right, to Dickinson, because you have Adams there. And what I wonder is, like, if you're really, really in a pinch, is Storr able to play there? But bringing in a sharpshooter from Dayton doesn't help the only thing you need left, which is depth in the post. They don't need another wing.
Well, they've got, you know, Flory Badunga as the freshman, incoming freshman coming in, that is highly touted in the post. And so, you know, but he's somebody that I think he could play some minutes, though. I mean, I'm not a huge, you know, believer, at least in the Jayhawks program, of starting a freshman right away. And that's not Dickinson is there. I don't really, you know, that's not going to happen regardless. But I'm not opposed to freshmen getting quality minutes and being, you know, backups and that sort of thing. And I think that's where, you know, that depth in the post comes from. I do think, and this has been surprising, really the only surprising thing in the portal so far this offseason isn't even the delay in his announcement. It's that both Elmarco Jackson and Jamari McDowell chose to stay at Kansas.
I thought
one of them would go so far, and maybe they will. Maybe they, you know, will be a late addition to the portal. But I think by all accounts, both of them, at least if I'm projecting out the lineup and the rotations and things like that, I've got Jackson and McDowell, both of them 10th, 11th out of the 12th, you know? And I think it's interesting because Jackson started a handful of games last year, and McDowell was a key contributor, and I use that term loosely, off the bench because they didn't have anybody else, you know. And so you're looking at probably less playing time for both of those guys next season. I'm surprised that either one of them stuck around. I'm even more surprised that both of them are still there.
If those two guys end up sticking around, and that's the other thing too, maybe that's where you go after one of these other guys, but if those two stick around, that's where KU was like in the chess mode while most others are in checkers, because what it tells you is, A, Bill Self just has such a grasp on this and a relationship with his players to have those guys willing to stick it out, because he continues to have guys be willing to play out much longer college careers than most schools have, and B, they're way ahead in the NIL. Because the other reason that you could see that is because there still may not be a better ability to earn than for those guys to sit there and be the 11th, 10th, and 11th guys in a rotation. I mean, you know, that's what's wild about it. So if KU's got the ability to do that, that's pretty crazy. And I don't know what the chances are that both of those guys stay. I just don't know why they wouldn't have already entered the portal, right? None of this is going to be a secret to them. Bill Self's not going to keep his plans from them. I would imagine they're very honest conversations. Like, guys, we're still looking for players in the portal. And let's get out here and earn it. Stick around. You'll be great Jayhawks by the time you're juniors and seniors. You're going to make plenty of money through the NIL. Just stick around and, you know, compete for a spot this year. And if in today's world, if you can get players to do that, man, that's just crazy to me. Because those two guys, both of them, could go somewhere and be really good players and get a ton of minutes. I like the upside of both of those players. I do. You know, McDowell, there was a time McDowell this year, early in the year, I was like, man, McDowell's going to be the dude. And it ended up being Furphy. But they're both in good shape. Big time. Love both of these additions for KU and K-State today. So there's your college basketball. We can touch on that. You can call in, leave your comments on the IHOP hotline. We've got a little argument here on the video stream. JB, and you showed this, we'll show it one more time. Saying that KU fans talk too much trash on Hunter. Would you come back to that? Well, he will, because he's going to get paid. But Ken says baloney. Dickinson got a ton of love for the fans. Yeah, he did. He'll be there. It makes no sense to me why this needs to be a come down to the deadline type of a thing. We all know you're not going to the NBA. Like, the NBA doesn't want you yet. You're not ready for that yet. So what are we waiting for? Like, come be the superstar in Lawrence, Kansas, that you are and can be. And everybody will love it. We don't need the drama there. Let's go.
There's no drama. You're manufacturing drama. There's no drama.
Manufacturing? No, I'm not. He hasn't signed yet. He hasn't committed yet.
There's no drama to it. It's just like, it is what it is, and we just, like, we wait. Like, there's not been any sort of indication that it's not going to happen. So why? It's a non-story at this point.
It's a story until he signs. It was a non-story with Chris Jones until he held out, right? Just get it done. 869-1240. We'll come back. We'll go back to the NFL draft a little bit here. Day two. What are we doing now moving forward? Anything else in round one that was curious? There's one other thing, I think, that indicates a pretty substantial move to be made. We'll talk about that next on Sports Daily. All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Let's go back to the NFL draft, round one. We've touched on it. One other thing I do think may indicate a large move coming would be Ricky Pearsall from Florida going to the Niners, Tommy. Kind of been some reporting. Obviously, Brandon Ayuk, who's up against a contract, has been rumored for trades for a while. Now Debo is being rumored for some trades, too. And they take Pearsall, and yeah, they could use all three of those guys, certainly. But it kind of feels like a move that would indicate they are ready to move away from one of these receivers. And it makes me wonder which one. They would both be really interesting. I love both of those receivers. But now if it's open season for one of those two guys, that screams Bills to me. Tommy, screams Bills, who've been trying to maybe acquire some picks, who could then use those picks and go trade for one of those players.
Yeah, I think so. I wonder what kind of return the Niners would get from the Bills to bring in, whether it's Debo or, you know, Ayuk. And I wonder about that because, you know, the Bills, I know they've kind of been able to bring in, you know, some added draft capital with the trades that they made. I know that They improved their spots later in the draft with the trade with Kansas City. And then I think that they ended up didn't they get an additional draft pick with the trade with the Panthers trading out of the number 32 spot? I think.
Yeah. I don't know what they got in that trade, but they would have gotten something. Of course.
I think they've improved at least the number of picks, or at least the position of the picks with the trades they made. I still don't like the fact that they did that, but you could, I think, maybe justify a trade today for one of those wide receivers with the Niners and the Bills. I'm just not sure, as far as like current players that are on that roster, who really the Niners would have a lot of interest in return to give up one of those two wide receivers.
It would be picks, because they feel like they're going to lose at least Ayuk anyway. It's kind of like when you have a baseball trade, is what it feels like to me. Like, we know we're going to lose this player or one of them. We can't afford to have them both. We've known that. It's very similar to what the Chiefs did with Tyreek Hill. It's interesting that it didn't come earlier in the draft, and maybe they just wanted to make sure they could get a receiver they liked moving forward. But, I mean, if I'm the Bills, I would be thrilled to have either of these receivers, number one. I love Brandon Ayuk. And with Josh Allen, I think either one of them are going to continue to be successful. I also don't think either one of them in a trade would require a first-round pick. You know, the Chiefs getting Tyreek Hill and all the picks that they got for him was, I think that's an outlier. I think it's far more likely that you'll see like second round picks or third round picks, a multitude of picks. It'll be a big haul for whoever does it. But I do think with that pick, we could have a big headline making trade because I can't imagine the Niners will roll with all three of those guys. Especially with Ayuk. Ayuk really wants his contract. He's trying to play nice, but that's going to end at some point. I think we're seeing it, and it's a total guess on the Bills thing, but it would make more sense as to why the Bills are trying to acquire picks if maybe there is a receiver somewhere they're looking at going and trading for. I also think with the Bills, because you brought them up and we haven't really dug into them yet, I think they're telling us they're going to be in rebuild mode to some degree. You know, not just because they traded away Steph Diggs and, did all that stuff, but because they're going to have to be at some point, right? Like it's going to have to happen at some point. And maybe they're just like, you know what, let's get it over with. What'd they get for Diggs next year? A second, I think it was the headline part of that. So, I mean, just use that as an example of what that kind of player is going to bring. And if Steph Diggs brings a second in year two, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to think a two is the asking price for Debo or Ayuk. Debo's probably a little bit more expensive, but...
Yeah, but I think that the counter to that is when you know that you've got your pick, you know, where it's at, and maybe they just didn't scout these guys this way, but when you've got your pick in the first round and you know you're in rebuild mode... And there are really talented, I'm just looking at wide receivers, really talented wide receivers that are right there for you, you know, ripe for the picking. You trade once, then you trade twice completely out of the first round. I know they only moved one spot back, but still you don't get a day one pick and you don't have Steph Diggs anymore. You don't have Gabe Davis anymore. What's going to be better if you're rebuilding in a long-term mode? Why wouldn't you draft a first round receiver with the thought that you can have that person in place for a number of years rather than spending more money on a veteran wide receiver that you're going to have to sign or trade for?
A couple of things I would say is that three receivers have fallen and they will be in a pretty good position to get one of them. So maybe they just happen to like Ladd McConkey, Adonai Mitchell, or Xavier Leggett. All guys who had
Leggett
been,
was taken.
You know,
Leggett was taken with number 32.
That's right. He was the last pick. Okay, so really then it's just McConkey and Mitchell, who are both guys who had been, you know, rumored to be in that first round range. Maybe you liked, and maybe they did like Leggett, though, right? And when they traded down, knowing that they're going to get, you know, somebody there. That's one reason they would do it. Yeah, I don't think, let me clarify, I don't think they're both rebuilding and in the market for Ayuk and Diggs. I mean, Ayuk and Debo. I just think both are possibilities for why they would do what they're doing. And either way, like if they're rebuilding and they like these other receivers more, you're just trying to stockpile picks. That's fine. That would be what that tells us. But I don't know. If Ayuk's out there, let me put it to you this way. When age is considered, I would trade Steph Diggs for either one of those guys straight up if it was up to me. So if you use the draft capital that you acquired in a Steph Diggs trade to go get either one of those players, I would say that's a win for Buffalo because I think they're, again, considering age, upgrading at the position. So the jury's still out for me on Buffalo in this draft. And I know they've been getting poo-pooed on because they traded with the Chiefs and all that stuff. I'm not ready to declare anything after day one with Buffalo because I still think their plan could be coming into place a little bit, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I think we haven't seen the true idea of what it is they're trying to do in this draft.
I mean, as of now, is anybody thinking that Buffalo will be able to at least make the playoffs next year? I mean, I have a hard time.
Make the playoffs, even sure. Looking they have Josh Allen as their quarterback.
They have nobody else. They have nobody else. Who else do they have?
Gabe Davis didn't give them anything anyway. That right now they've lost Steph Diggs, and they can replace Steph Diggs. I mean, they can. They've got John. They look at the tight ends.
The defensive
ends they
unit
have there.
That's another year older. You sure. know, I just I think like they're it's hard because I understand that you've got kind of this, at least it looks like indications of some kind of rebuild. But if you're going to rebuild, you have to go fully into rebuild mode. I think some of the
Josh
worst
Allen is your quarterback.
But I think some of the, and I'm not, you don't move away from a franchise quarterback like that. But what I'm saying is that I think one of the biggest issues that teams have sometimes, some of the worst decisions are when they halfway rebuild while halfway trying to compete right now, then they don't do either one very well. And then it just kicks the can down the road. If you're the Buffalo Bills, I think you got to commit one way or the other.
I don't agree with that when you have your quarterback, and I'll tell you why. I'll give you a couple examples. Aaron Rodgers is one for sure that immediately jumps to my head. You get the luxury of being able to compete while you're rebuilding when you have one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I mean, that's the beauty of having Josh Allen, is you're never going to have to go through like a total blow-it-up Carolina Panthers-level rebuild when Josh Allen is your quarterback. You're going to be competitive when he's under center no matter what else is on the roster. So unless they traded Josh Allen, there's nothing they're going to do that's a total rebuild. And I just don't think they're done yet with the draft. Again, this could be as simple as they just like some of the receivers that they could go get on day two. Could be that simple. Or they're loading up to do something bigger, and the Niners just sit there to me as a team that's like, huh. But the only thing, I mean, the Niners want to trade one of those guys. They almost have to now because of the contract situation. I mean, I'm sure they would love to just load up with this talent, but they can't afford it. So let's go to day two for the Chiefs. We talked about what they should do. Again, I'm going to give you some of the day two picks in recent years for the Chiefs. Day two, rounds two and three, right? And I don't know when they exactly shifted to that, so we'll just call it the middle rounds, right? We'll call it 2-3, and I'm going to include 4 here, Tommy, because they've had so much success in that round. Last year, day two, or the middle rounds, rounds 2, 3, and 4, they were able to land Rashee Rice and Wanya Morris. In the middle rounds in 2022, it was Sky Moore, jury's out, right? But Brian Cook and Leo Chenal were in that range. Very nice. And we'll see on Joshua Williams. He may get a bigger role this year. So again, nice job in the middle rounds. The year before that, Nick Bolton, Creed Humphrey, both in the middle rounds. If you include round 5 there, you've got Noah Gray also in the mix, who's been a handy player. Year before that, Tommy, Willie Gay Jr., Lucas Niang, Legarius Sneed, Michael Dana in those rounds. This is where the Chiefs have built their dynasty. Outside of Mahomes, right now is why they've been able to sustain the roster losses, all the different things, is because they have been so successful in these rounds at evaluating players. And here we go again. They've got a pretty good opportunity to do that. Let's look at what they've got left, because I haven't actually done that since they've made all these trades. So let me just see what they have here. I'm going to pull that up right now. They have currently, they have kept their second, Tommy, and it's where it originally was. So they'll pick, you know, last pick of the second round. They lose their third altogether at this point. They have now 2 fourth-round picks and 2 fifth-round picks. Is that enough ammo to move up in the second round? It probably is. If they wanted to give up one of those fourths and one of those fifths to move up in the second, not to the top of the second by any means, that would take future picks at this point. They probably, though, can move around a little bit, but they have, you know, 4-5 picks in these middle rounds we're talking about to do some damage. And so if they just stand pat and pick in all their spots, I think you like their chances to land at least one more useful player, if not two.
Yeah. I don't think they're probably going to trade up again, at least in the second round. That would surprise me if they did, because I know that one of the things that Brett Veach values is quantity of picks. And, you know, the fact that they've got 2 fourths and 2 fifths, you know, you can make an impact, I think, in both of those rounds. And I don't know if Brett Veach would be interested in sacrificing that quantity in both of those rounds to move up a few spots in the second? Maybe he would, but I think that it'd have to blow him away. I would be surprised to see them trade up. I think they'll probably, in my opinion, stick with their original second round pick and then just wait for the fourth round to come around and then the fifth round. And then at that point, you know, get your total draft class and feel pretty good about it.
If they like the left tackle, I don't care if they trade every pick in the rest of this draft and go get it. You know what I mean? I know that's ridiculous. They're obviously not going to do that. They're not going to do that. What I'm saying is I think they are so fine on the roster that if they blow up the rest of the draft to some degree, because again, this is the if they love a tackle, you know, if they've evaluated this guy and they know they have to move up to get him, the way that they evaluate linemen in this range, I'm fine with them doing that. I don't think they'll have to, because I think if they loved a player that much, they probably would have just taken him in the first round, right?
Yep.
So something like that would come a little later anyway. But just the beauty for the Chiefs now is they have a lot of picks in their wheelhouse here with five, and they just really don't need much else on the roster. There's not like a glaring hole. Not that there was really coming in. They need a left tackle for next year. Does it have to come through the draft? Not necessarily. You know, a project left tackle might make some sense to me. With Wanya Morse, but you'd have to go out in free agency. But now they don't have to go out in free agency, Tommy, and take a receiver, right? So probably that's coming. I think you're absolutely right there. They got a lot of options, and they've got a lot of options with the part of the draft they've been really, really, really good at lately. And, you know, to move up and get the wide receiver they really liked to still have five picks in rounds 2 through 5, I think that's pretty – that's you couldn't have drawn it up much better for the Chiefs. Now, whether Worthy works out or not, we'll find out. But as far as, like, strategy of the draft, I feel like this is probably exactly what they, you know, had the intent of and designs of doing before they came in the room.
Yeah, a first-round pick is a first-round pick, and it's valuable. There's no doubt about that. But historically, you know, I think the thought has always been, you pick at the very end of the first round. I mean, it's great you won a Super Bowl or you were, you know, deep in the playoffs or whatever, but not super impactful all the time. No, I think it's gotten to the point now where it absolutely is. And the Chiefs did what they needed to do to get better in an area they needed for sure to get better in the first round. Now they still have five remaining picks, and they can still go out there and, I think, improve themselves today and into tomorrow.
There's one more player out there. Cooper DeJean's still out there. There's no way he falls very far, I don't think, here. I'm surprised he's still there. Man, that's another player where it's like, fits a need, do you trade up? They're just in a good position today. They did a really, really good job yesterday. We'll come back. I want to get your take. Were there any picks you loved or hated? We talked about the quarterbacks, obviously. And I also want to
talk about the Royals, by the way.
Ken. They won the series. We'll get it. We'll get some Royals talk in here too. It's NFL draft day. Here we go. Royals, listen, Royals are awesome. We'll get them. We'll get it all in. We'll cram it in on this Friday. Sports Daily coming right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here. So, Tommy, we know where all the quarterbacks are. Which one's landing spot, likelihood of success, all of that do you like the most? We know it's not Bo Nix for you. It's not for me either. But now that we know where they are, what do you think?
I think Jaden Daniels is going to be a superstar in Washington. I love that pick. I think he's going to be great. Caleb Williams is the easy answer for sure. For me, it's probably Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, it's Caleb Williams for me, no doubt about it. I think Drake May is going to have the toughest time, really, of all of them, quite honestly, because I think he's in the worst situation roster-wise. But Caleb Williams with the Dunze there now. The Bears are doing this right. After a lot of years of not doing it right, man, they are just saying, we're taking this quarterback of the future, and we are going to help him succeed. And to hell with everything else, right? Like, you've got DJ Moore there. They've got Keenan Allen there. Now they've got Roma Dunze there, which is going to be good for Roma Dunze's development. Like, love it. Caleb Williams is in a perfect spot, and so is J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy is probably the one to look at for Rookie of the Year consideration, I would think. Caleb Williams won't give you enough odds on that, but, I mean, you walk into a room with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and T.J. Hockenson, a good offensive line, and a great quarterback coach. J.J. McCarthy's got to be thrilled here about that. Any other picks that, you know, outside of the, you know, the headline ones, the quarterbacks, that you just didn't like, that you were like, ah, what are they thinking there? I don't think I had any. Did you?
The only one that comes to mind for me, I don't love the Brock Bowers pick for the Raiders. I love Brock Bowers. I think he's incredible.
Yeah.
But who's going to throw him the ball? And I know that at that point, the Brock taken Bo Nix, and so there really weren't any other quarterbacks that were available. But they've got to get that addressed because, I mean, you're going to roll into another year with Aiden O'Connell. I mean, that doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence.
I agree. I think they probably just at that point got screwed on quarterback and said, let's just take our best player on the board.
That's what that pick.
Well, no, I mean, I'm sure they had Brock Bowers graded highly, right? And maybe they did try to trade down and everyone's like, now we're good. I think they probably lost the day in the sense that they didn't end up with any of the quarterbacks. And I think they really wanted one. I think Penix kind of cost them there. I liked what the Cowboys did. I liked what the Ravens did. But you know, nothing to me was just like, I cannot believe they did that. Except the Falcons was the most head scratching to me. All right. Royals talk real quick. They get it done. It is now on to Detroit. It was a weird day. They didn't know if they were going to finish the game. They finally decide not to. So it's a quick turnaround, though, because it was a getaway day, and now they got to play at noon today, Tommy.
Yeah, I like it, though. I mean, the fact that they didn't have to sit around and wait for the game to be resumed and all of that. I mean, it was just called. It was able to be an official game.
No, they did have to sit around and wait. They waited for three hours.
But what I'm saying is they didn't have to sit around and wait to get back on the field and finish playing a game and then go.
Got it.
Like, they sat around and waited. Then they just called the game and everybody left. So it could have been worse in that scenario. It was, you know, they called it as an official game. They get the win. They take the series from the Blue Jays. Much needed after dropping the opening game. They've won three in a row. Once again, on, you know, a really bad weather day, pitching was pretty solid. Cole Reagans probably pitched his best game of the season so far in a shortened game. Don't get me wrong.
He still got through six innings.
But yeah, now you get to go to Detroit. You get Seth Lugo on the bump with a day game today to keep things rolling. I'm not really necessarily concerned about the turnaround time right now, but this is exactly what the Royals needed.
Tommy, if Salvi is going to be what he has started this season being, I don't know. Salvi's already a Hall of Famer. He's only 34 years old. I'm not certain that we have seen the final evolutions of Salvador Perez as a hitter. I think he's got two or three years here as he sort of steps away to a smaller degree from catching, that he does something like we've seen so many guys do, you know, David Ortiz, Nelson Cruz. Like, some of these guys jump to mind as dudes that can hit can play in this game for a long, long time. Like, what kind of numbers by the end of this could we potentially be challenging for Salvador Perez? Is 500 home runs on the table for him?
I think being able to be one of, if not the greatest catcher of all time, is definitely on the table right now. By the way, I just want to point out, if the Royals can keep winning games when they're only scoring two or three runs a game, it's remarkable. It's incredible. Pitching's been great.
I agree. And it's good to see him bounce back because they had a little shaky couple of games there. But we'll have much more on the Royals after this weekend series because the Tigers look like they're going to be contenders in the Central. It's another just massive series on the road. We'll see if they can get it done. We'll tell you about those games when you can hear them right here on KFH as we get you primed for the weekend next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Friday, everybody. It's a great Friday on Sports Daily following round one of the NFL draft. We have picks in the books, some that excite us, some that surprise us, some that leave us shaking our heads. We'll go through it all, including the Kansas City Chiefs and what they did in round one. We've got the Royals, winners of a big series against Toronto. There we go. Exactly what we needed to see out of Kansas City in a rain-shortened game yesterday. We can get into that. KU adding even more through the transfer portal. What does that mean? We'll go through the latest there as they get another huge name out of the portal to join into the mix for next season on the basketball front. A lot to get to today, everybody. Glad to be here with you. It's going to be a fun show, I can tell you that. Jacob Albrocht, Tommy Kaster, Jad Chambers producing, Jad manning that IHOP hotline. On that IHOP hotline today, you'll have a chance to win some prizes, HTO free tea and coffee, as always here on Sports Daily. So stay tuned for your opportunity there. Tommy, good morning. How are you? I know it was a late night for all of us staying up with the NFL draft, but we're here.
Yeah, it was a late night. I was hoping to get to bed a little bit earlier than I did. I'm glad the Chiefs traded up because that allowed me to, you know, maybe get another 10 minutes or so of sleep tonight.
Yeah, I got to watch the whole thing through. At least if you're me. And then you got to watch the analysis of the whole thing through. So it was late for me. It was very late. But I'm a night owl anyway. So nothing too unusual. It was, you know, it was interesting to take it in. The Chiefs moved up as we sort of expected. It came to this question of, do they move up for tackle? Do they move up for receiver? It was obviously for receiver in Xavier Worthy. And we'll get into that pick specifically. Draft overall, Tommy, I feel okay about how I thought it would go. I thought it'd be crazy. I don't think it was crazy, but I also thought we'd see something crazy with quarterbacks being taken, and that for sure happened, right? You had, what was it, 6 in the top 12, which is insane, but this was the quarterback class people talked about that way, so we'll see. All 6 are not going to work out, you'd almost guarantee, but a lot of them will, and you had some really curious picks. You had some really chalky picks. And here we are after day one, and we know, too, like, you get into this second day, and this is where, you know, this is where teams that draft well clean house, and I'll give you an example of that with the Chiefs in just a little bit, but it was a satisfying draft. I think we'd hoped for some more trades, but, you know, we got the drama in other ways. The quarterbacks going, you know, the Falcons taking quarterback, the Broncos reaching on quarterback, the Chiefs making a trade that's with the Bills historically has a little drama and intrigue. There were a lot of, you know, smaller things happening. Wasn't nuclear like I thought, but the quarterback thing, boy, it just, you could kind of see it coming a little bit the way these quarterbacks were being talked about. And I texted you it last night, and what stood out to me is as it was falling into place, it seemed to me what's interesting is all the teams that took these quarterbacks likely got the quarterbacks they were targeting where they were drafting, right? So, you know, the top three was fine. It was chalk. It was what most people had in the top three. Well, the Vikings played their cards. They didn't move to get McCarthy. They get him where they were picking. That's a big win for the Vikings, right? The Falcons clearly wanted Penix. I mean, obviously, and they took him right where they were drafting. So they got who they wanted. And then the Broncos. I think the Broncos, after you hear some of the reports, I don't know that they, you know, thought Bo Nix was the best quarterback in the class, but it was pretty clear that they liked Bo Nix enough to justify taking him. And of course, if Sean Payton's right about Bo Nix, then it's totally justified. Neither one of us think he is. But it was interesting to see that happen. As nobody really moved around, Tommy, I do think everybody kind of got the quarterbacks they were hoping for at their spots.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, I think especially at the top of the draft, for sure, and Williams and Daniels. And you know, I was a little bit surprised with Drake May going at number 3 to the Patriots. I thought that maybe they would look at McCarthy as an option. Of course, McCarthy fell all the way to the Vikings. I was a little bit surprised with that. But other than that, at that point, it basically caused that domino effect where then you had, of course, the Falcons going Penix. And then really Bo Nix, I feel like, is a player that maybe projected, and I think I saw a bunch of mock drafts, projected him into the first round, maybe into the second round, you know, somewhere around there. But because you had 5 quarterbacks taken in the first, 9, 10 picks, it basically, you know, put that value on Bo Nix's shoulders. And then at that point, there was a big drop off after Bo Nix. So, you know, it was wild. I don't agree with you that Sean Payton and the Broncos love Bo Nix. I think that maybe they scattered him out to be fine, but then, you know,
they wouldn't have taken him there if they didn't love him. And you heard
they needed to take a quarterback. I told you that last night. They had to take a quarterback because they needed to save face after the Zach Wilson trade.
They didn't have to take a quarterback right there, though, is what I mean.
I think they did. I mean, they could have moved around. They could have traded.
They could have waited. If they didn't love Bo Nix,
if they were going to stay at number 12,
Spencer Rattler, they could have done it. They could have done a lot of things. Here's what makes me think that: after the pick, it sounded like Adam Schefter was sort of sitting on a report about how much Sean Payton loved Bo Nix. Now, you know, the reporting, I think we both heard it a little different. I was doing 1,000 things, so. The way I took it was Payton wanted to take Nix the way that he wanted to take Mahomes in the draft. Mahomes was taking him before the Chiefs swooped in and got him. So that just tells you he likes him. The other thing is there is a stylistic comparison to Drew Brees with Bo Nix. So, I mean, that's the thing. And then if you saw the draft room right after, and I know draft rooms, they all act excited about their picks. Man, they were pretty fired up about that pick. It seemed like they liked Nix. Now, did they have to overdraft him to make sure they got him? Totally. I mean, that's absolutely possible. What I'm saying is I think they like Bo Nix. I don't think it was a save face pick. I think they really like that player. Now, I don't think they're right, so don't misunderstand me. I think it was a bad pick. I don't think Bo Nix is that good. I mean, he's fine. He's got a chance to, like, you know, stick around, but I don't see him as, again, my criteria for drafting NFL quarterbacks in the first round better be you think this is going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Well, I think he projects
1,000 times.
I think, you know, if you're comparing him to the rest of the class, I mean, yeah, like obviously he's probably 6th out of the top 6.
He's different. But he's different than those guys.
But if you are projecting him in the current Broncos quarterback room, he projects to be the starting quarterback, right?
I mean, sure.
He projects to be better than Zach Wilson. He projects to be better than Jarrett Stidham. That bar is really low, though.
He's probably the most equipped out of the group, you know, outside of maybe Caleb Williams, to step in immediately and just be ready to roll.
He's older than Zach Wilson is.
I know, right. So
Zach Wilson's been in the league for 3 years.
Again, I didn't like the pick, so don't misunderstand. I'm not trying to defend the pick because I didn't like the pick. I didn't think they had to take him there. They just clearly really wanted him, so they did. I will say, though, that if he and he probably is, because enough people have said this, is as smart as he is, as cerebral as a quarterback as he is, and his strength as he went to Oregon became this dink and dunker. Well, that's what Sean Payton does. So, I mean, I get it. I just think they way overdrafted him, but I do think he's a guy they really did want. Now, maybe they wanted, you know, Caleb Williams more, but that was never in the cards. And we heard that people were trying to trade up to 2 and trying to trade up for 3. They could have been one of those teams. What I'm saying is I think they really liked Bo Nix. I don't think it. I think, and obviously the Falcons really liked Penix. I mean, you want to talk about that? To me, that was the biggest surprise of the night. And then the, you know, in the three quarter, in the three teams at the top just took kind of who everyone thought they were going to take. So it's really interesting that there were a lot of quarterbacks taken, but they were all sort of there. And McCarthy to the Vikings, like, and maybe they got the best defensive player in the draft too. I know the Bears cleaned up by letting, by, you know, Adunze falling the way he did. Man, the Vikings got McCarthy in a seemingly perfect fit with maybe the best defensive player in the class. There's a chance the Vikings, you know, did exactly what the Texans did last year with a lot less draft capital. So Minnesota fans who've been so frustrated for so long, I would imagine are universally just ecstatic today with the way their draft went. And, you know, the other team, Tommy, that has to be ecstatic today, or fans, and I'm getting the indication that this is the case, is the Chiefs. And we'll talk more about it holistically, but let's lock in on the Chiefs here. So it's a Buffalo trade, which is just funny, right, that it's a Buffalo trade again. They, you know, they identified Worthy, I think, which makes me happy. I like that they identified players. We talked about that before. I wanted it to be a tackle, I'm okay that it wasn't. If, you know, if they identified a different player that way, and they clearly did. I loved Worthy in college. Now, I also loved Quentin Johnston, so I'm trying to be careful with that, like Big 12 bias kind of thing, right? Just because we see him a lot. But Worthy's, I mean, his skill set is very apparent and real, and he's clearly very fast. The thought of he and Hollywood Brown both trying to take the top off, I just can't quite wrap my head around what that's going to look like. But you know what? You know what? Here's just a slight concern with that. That means you got to give Mahomes time and those receivers time to get down the field. They've got to get tackle addressed here. And what I hope is that they've evaluated the tackle class and they like somebody a lot further down the board that they can then go attack. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's
but
what I'm
look,
hoping.
That's not, I don't think that's the case. I think that it's going to be, maybe they do draft a tackle at some point today, or maybe even tomorrow. They're going to go sign a veteran short-term deal. They're going to go pick up a Donovan Smith, who is, again, unsigned as of right now, and he's got familiarity with the system. They're going to go and do that. I don't think they're going to lean on Wanya Morris or a middle-of-the-draft rookie from this year to start at left tackle. They'll go get Donovan Smith, and then there's a handful of other veterans that they could, you know, talk to if they wanted to, that are still available, that are on the market. That's probably what they're going to do, considering that they used the first round pick on a wide receiver. I don't blame them, because offensive tackle outside of quarterback went really heavy in the first round last night. They would have needed to trade up. They would have needed to trade up into probably the teens at minimum to get an offensive tackle that they felt like they could plug in and start right away at left tackle this season for the Chiefs. And that was a little amazing to me. I knew that the offensive line class was pretty top heavy and pretty deep and all of that. But I thought that, well, there would at least be one or two players that the Chiefs felt like could be, you know, a viable or maybe even dominant starter right away on their line. And maybe they didn't evaluate anybody that way. There were a lot of those guys that were taken earlier in the first round, so they went wide receiver, and I get that. I understand that. But they're not I don't feel like they're in a position where they can take an offensive lineman in the middle of the draft and then have him be plug and play right into the starting lineup right away.
Well, maybe not week one, but I do think it's possible that, you know, they continue to evaluate these guys well. And
Wanya Morris, you know, was a middle of the draft pick.
He was third. You know, so here's the recent history. Wanya Morris was a third last year. You go back and, you know, the really one that jumps off the screen is Creed Humphrey was a second in 21. And Trey Smith was a sixth in 21. Lucas Niang in 2020 was a third. Was a handy player, right? They have a good history of identifying these guys in this part of the draft. And if I'm, you know, if you look at the prospect rankings and everything, there are, you know, so six go last night. There's sort of like a next three that grade into the next two rounds, more or less, or really there's four probably. And so they could, and they lost some draft capital last night in the trade with the Bills, but they could still identify one of these tackles here And again, like, you could justify it. And that's what made it so hard to guess at what they were going to do, receiver or tackle, because we don't know what their board looks like. You know, if they have those, if they have a guy and they know, like, we love this player more than everybody else does. That's what they did with Patrick Mahomes in a higher profile situation. Then they will still be able to go get that player. I mean, we go into this draft and they need three things: a tackle, a corner, and a receiver. And that's like, that's pretty much what they, that's all they need in this draft. So they can
you can maybe look at linebacker. Linebacker maybe, yeah, you know, next on the list, but yeah, yeah. I get it.
But I'm saying if they sacrifice everything because they've identified this next tier of linemen that they really like and they want to move up again and go get that player, that will tell us, right, that they really love that player. Just like Worthy, right? They clearly loved Worthy. They clearly loved what he brought to the table because they moved up to get him. When you see teams move up to get players, you know it's not just a, oh, he was the top player on our board. No, it's a, we've identified this guy and we want to go get him. If they do that again for a tackle, I will feel pretty good about it because they have just been so good at identifying offensive linemen in the draft in recent
history. And that's
history.
Fine. That's fine. I don't have an issue with them doing that. If they project out one of these offensive linemen, maybe in the second or third round, that they can, if they feel like they need to move up to get, then yeah, go and get him if he, you know, projects out to maybe be a future starter. I don't think that addresses the need in week one of the regular season. And I don't think that you want to roll out there with Wanya Morris necessarily. That's why I still think they're going to probably try to do something with a cheap-ish veteran left tackle to at least start the season.
I'd be curious if they took one soon here in the draft, if they're comfortable with that combination of Morris and that player. The other thing is that I wonder about, too, always, and it's just my curiosity, like, do their great guards, do either one of them project out to tackle at all? And I always do wonder about that, like, if that's anywhere remotely in the possibility, and then maybe they could just draft a guard, right? But
well, because then you're talking Joe Tooney, you know, at that right. point. Joe Tooney's
and
been around for a long time.
And I think he has played a little
But don't you think that if he was going to play tackle full-time, he probably would have already moved
no, I mean
to
in
that
a
position
pinch.
In
Absolutely,
career.
Yes. I just mean in a pinch. Like, if it fails miserably, like, yeah. What's the emergency plan? And that,
and then
and
obviously
that,
Trey
point,
Smith is there, too.
Yeah, and to your point, that's why it's pretty important that they get a vet in there. But if they move up now to take tackle, man, I thought they might take corner last night. We were talking about this, you and I were.
Quinion Mitchell would have been incredible.
These corners
had he been
fallen.
Yep.
These corners are fallen. Like, this is all, and as soon as they got through what, the Broncos, probably the Raiders when they took Bowers. I mean, it's just like the alarms are going off. Like, this is the Chiefs are totally going to get aggressive here. Like, this is falling perfectly for them. Nobody was reaching on receiver, right at the time. Nobody yet was reaching on tackle or corner. And I'm like, I mean, everybody's fallen. And that's exactly what happened. They were like, you know what? It's time. Let's go get Worthy now. Because the Cowboys would have been in, let me tell you this right now, with Jerry Jones, the Cowboys would have been in on Worthy. So the Cowboys and the Chiefs dynamic was really interesting to me. And the Cowboys take the tackle from Oklahoma.
They could have had Worthy. They traded down. They traded out of that spot.
I know. So what was interesting to me in the Cowboys the Cowboys are one of the, if not the best drafting team in football, which is why it's so maddening that as a Cowboys fan that they can't get over the hump. But they did very Cowboys things. They moved down. They still get the player they probably wanted. Now, so what I kept wondering, though, is, like, because those were the two players I had identified for the Chiefs, too, right? Oh, there's Worthy and Guyton. Like, they're going to have the ability to get either one. Same thing for the Cowboys. Worthy and Guyton, here they come. Jerry Jones loves drafting Big 12 players. You had that right there in front of you, and Worthy would have been a really good fit for Dallas too. They may go get a receiver, but either one of them, and they both kind of get these players. And I had Cowboys fans, you know, messaging back and forth. And I think this, Tommy, like, either one of those teams would have been so happy with either one of those picks. Like, you could flip flop them, and both teams probably feel like, heck yeah, we did great there. And that was interesting to me because I think those are two teams who are doing it well in recent years, but that was kind of a cat and mouse dynamic that was getting pretty interesting.
And then on the flip side, you know, you're talking about how well the Cowboys and the Chiefs drafted and the way that they maneuvered everything. What in the world are the Bills doing? Why are they trading their pick to the Chiefs? Why are they trading completely out of the first round? They need a wide receiver more than anybody does. That was baffling to me.
I think they're being real. I think they're keeping it real. We'll talk about the Bills. We'll talk about the Falcons. We'll talk about the head scratchers from yesterday when we come back. We'll get into the worthy pick. We'll get into KU. And they're just, you know, they're just stacking up the Avengers here for next season. But we'll get to all of it throughout the show here. I want to remind you that Shocker baseball broadcasts are available live for free on KFH and on the Odyssey app. Tune into KFH for Wichita State baseball versus Tulane at 5:45 today. You can also just download the Odyssey app and search for KFH. All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Breaking news, as KU, and we're not, we'll get into this in the second hour. So KU lands Rylan Griffin from Alabama. That was expected. K-State just gets a big one. Brendan Housen, and forgive me, because he's from my hometown. He's from Amarillo, which he was one of the bigger basketball signings from that area in a long time. He went to Villanova. He's coming into K-State. I'm working on kind of getting a scouting report on him for you K-State fans. He's a big guard that can really, really shoot it. One of the better shooters in the country. I didn't even realize he was in the portal. He's only scored about 6 points a game last year for Nova, but his minutes doubled from his freshman year. I think K-State fans are really going to like him. So bear with me, K-State fans. That news just coming in. I'm going to get you a little more details on what kind of player he is from some colleagues back in Amarillo who watched him, you know, his entire high school career. So stay tuned for that. I'll get that for you. NFL draft talk continues here on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. IHOP hotline is open, 869-1240. Appreciate Prairie Fire, by the way, for fueling us up every morning with some delicious coffee there in the studio. Keeps Jad awake as he comes in for his morning duties bright and early. But we always appreciate them and their support of this show. By the way, thanks for listening to us here on KFH. KFHradio.com if you're streaming us. Maybe you're sneaking us in the office. Best way to do that. Video stream, Facebook, YouTube, X. Appreciate all the ways people take in the shows. Tommy, let's talk about the head scratchers last night. We like what the Chiefs did. I didn't think the Chiefs needed to go receiver, but I like the way they went about their business, and I like the player. I do like Xavier Worthy a lot. Not just because he ran a fast 40 time either. I loved him in college. The biggest head scratcher is the Falcons. I think what we saw last night, Tommy, when you saw the Falcons make their pick and when you saw the Broncos make their pick, is that if you think the quarterback is your quarterback of the future, there is just nothing too crazy to justify it, to justify taking him, right? I think that the Packers are the gold standard for that. I think that the Chiefs, to some degree, have sort of set that in motion. I really think we've entered this era. Like, if these teams, because the reality is, the Falcons took Bijan Robinson in about the same spot last year, right? Did they necessarily need him? They had Tyler Allgeier already there that they invested some in, you know.
Yeah, that was a head scratcher.
Cordarrelle Patterson.
Last year.
Right? So what I'm saying is they obviously are telling us that if they really like a player, how often do teams miss on players at that portion
of the draft?
They took
Kyle Pitts like 3 years ago with the fourth overall pick.
It happens all the time. It's just when it happens with quarterbacks, we see it and as such a massive failure. But the reality is teams miss on picks early in the first round all the time.
We see it as a massive failure for two reasons. Number one, because quarterback is the linchpin to a championship. And number two, because quarterbacks are by far the most expensive player on the field. And so you've got to make a significant investment in your quarterback. So you better be right on that.
No, well, only if they're good.
But even I'm not even talking about just a financial investment. I'm talking about a draft capital investment to get a quarterback. Sure. And so at that point, you've got to make sure that it's correct.
And there's also only one of them, right? And so this is not a great comparison. at all because of where they were selected in the first round. But let's say Felix Anudike Uzama never really pans out. It was a risky pick when they took him. They overdrafted him. I hope he does. I love the player. But, you know, you took a risk there. Only one quarterback gets to play, though, and they have Kirk Cousins there. But the reality is, if they're right about Penix, if they're right, it's a great pick. Just but like if the Packers were right about Jordan Love at the time with all the drama, it was the right pick. It just like if the Chiefs were right about Patrick Mahomes, even though they had Alex Smith, it was the right pick. Even if you don't need it, if you're right about the quarterback, it's the right pick, right? Like you got, there is no, there, I think what we're seeing now is teams will do anything if they feel like that quarterback is in that stratosphere. They just don't care anymore. They'll take them.
That's all well and good, but we're not going to know for, gosh, maybe close to half a decade if Michael Penix was the
that's
right
not
choice
true.
Or not.
You know
we're
that's not,
gonna not
know
true.
For,
how long is Kirk Cousins going to be in Atlanta? I know his
doesn't matter.
I know his contract. I know his contract is only 2 years guaranteed.
You got to take him out of the equation here.
They're paying him $180 million.
Not in the short
overall,
term, but yeah. It won't be more than, I don't think it'll be Jordan Love, but it might be 2 years. It'll probably be one.
Why would they sign Kirk Cousins then if they loved Michael Penix Jr.?
Because they didn't know they were going to love Michael Penix Jr. They didn't know he was going to be there. I think that the circumstances just presented themselves. I'm not justifying that pick either, by the way. I'm not trying to say I love Bo Nix or I love Michael Penix. I'm just trying to get into the psyche of these teams that are doing this. That's all I'm trying to do.
I really like Michael Penix.
I
like him a
Penix.
Lot.
I don't like Bo Nix much, but I like, but so do I. And so that's
major
why I'm
difference,
like, you know what?
The major right, difference, and I know you keep referencing the Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love dynamic in Green Bay. The major difference is that let's just say that the Falcons let Kirk Cousins play out the duration of his contract. Michael Penix Jr. will be 28 years old by the time the Kirk Cousins deal is up. And that's money that is attached to Kirk Cousins in Atlanta. And I know the first 2 years are really the guaranteed years of the contract, but it's not unlike, at least from a money perspective, Russell Wilson. It's you know, apples and oranges as far as the quality of player, but the money that is tied up at quarterback under Kirk Cousins, if you sign him and then ultimately you're just benching him, you're kind of washing all that money down the drain that you're paying Kirk Cousins because you want to play Michael Penix because you drafted him so high. So I love Michael Penix Jr. I just do not understand why the Falcons would do that. I mean, it's not like Michael Penix Jr. just burst onto the scene a couple of weeks ago. He's been around for a long time. And maybe they just had, you know, conversations with him and workouts and things like that. But man, like, if you even had any kind of inclination that you liked Michael Penix Jr. or any quarterback for that matter, why are you signing Kirk Cousins?
Well, when did Kirk Cousins sign? Like, what was the date? Because
like four weeks ago, like 3-4 weeks ago, it wasn't that long ago.
I just don't, because they had hired Morris.
Correct.
And had they yet been through the combine in their quarterback evaluations of Penix?
So it looks like he was signed on March 13th. I think the combine was right after that. They signed Kirk Cousins on March 13th.
Well, that makes more sense then, because they fell in love with Penix, obviously. The combine was late February. So the combine probably happened about the same time. I just don't get it. It's a head scratcher because I agree. If you liked Penix that much, you have to evaluate it as, we're going to be able to get Penix at 8. Don't go get Kirk Cousins in that. And I think what you probably had was the owner and the GM not on the same page. The owner probably loved Kirk Cousins. The GM probably loved Penix. But in reality, Kirk Cousins is going to be the starting quarterback all year, unless he gets hurt, which is a risk, by the way. It's a risk with him and his advanced age. It's also a risk with Penix. Not the worst thing in the world to have two good ones. I just think it'll probably work itself out.
And I get the knock on Kirk Cousins. I mean, I get, you know, Kirk Cousins is 35. He's coming off an Achilles injury. Like, all these different things. I understand why you'd want to have, you know, some sort of contingency plan with a guy like Michael Penix, who you really like a lot, but you're paying Kirk Cousins a lot of money.
I know.
Like, if you had those concerns, like, and if I'm Kirk Cousins today, and I know that, like, there were reports that he was stunned and disappointed and had no idea and blah, blah, blah. If I'm Kirk Cousins today, this morning, I'm thinking, why didn't I re-sign with the Vikings? Why did I not stay with Minnesota? Sounded like Minnesota wanted to keep him.
They did.
Sounded like he wanted to be there. Yep. Like, they wanted him. He loved his time in Minnesota. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but man, like, I'm sure he's probably regretting that decision today.
Can I bet you? Can I bet you $1 on April 26th of 2024, before his career is done, Kirk Cousins will play quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. They'll be done with Dak, finally, and they'll just say, you know what?
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's just not going to work out. And Kirk Cousins is going to be sitting there like, the hell's going on here? And they'll bring in Kirk Cousins, and he'll quarterback the Cowboys before he's done. I can see it coming a mile away. Just as an aside, I don't know what's going to happen here. For the short term, Cousins steps into Atlanta and will be their quarterback this year unless he gets hurt. Penix will be able to learn under one of the best. I love Kirk Cousins, which will be good for Penix. And, you know, probably with those two personalities, those two guys, I would guess that when the dust settles on the surprise of this, that will go swimmingly and will go very well, actually, and go similar to the way
probably
it did
will.
With Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. And
by all accounts, Kirk Cousins is a great guy. So, I mean, I think that that will – there's not going to be a ton of drama, I don't think. But I think internally, you know, that's got to be – it's got to be difficult.
Kirk – and I don't want to feel – terrible for Kirk Cousins. He got a ton of guaranteed money. And if he plays well this year and the Falcons feel like they're pressured to go to Penix in year two, and it may end up being year three, Kirk Cousins would have 1,000 suitors, right, of teams that would want to bring him in to try to win right away. I mean, lots of them. There would be so many teams lined up for his services if he's back and healthy and playing at the level he was last year before he got hurt, that's not going to be a problem either. It will work itself out. It just doesn't make a ton of sense. But I think what we're seeing is teams willing more than ever before, if they love a quarterback, just to get them and just say, we'll figure it out later. We do see that quite a bit more now than we used to. It used to be a need position. And I don't think it is anymore. I think it gets evaluated and honestly elevated. And it's like, we'll just deal with that problem down the road. I mean, the Falcons are sitting here today hoping that Kirk Cousins is amazing and that Michael Penix is amazing. That's the best case scenario for the Vikings. So it's, I mean, if they're right about Penix, it's fine. It's a fine,
How are we going to know if they're right about Penix? We won't know that for a long time.
Well, it'll
we didn't know that about,
take,
yeah, we didn't know about Jordan
three
Love.
Or 4 years. Right. But we know now that the Packers were right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How old is Jordan Love?
Right now?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he came out of college.
26, I think.
So he's young.
He'll turn 26.
He's younger. Yeah. So he became a starter at what, age 25? Somewhere around there? Again, I'll go back to what I said before. If the duration of the Cousins contract plays out in Atlanta, Penix will be 28.
It won't. Penix is about to turn 24. So, you know, if he sits out 1 year, he'd start at 25. If he sits out two, he'd start at 26. That's fine, right? That's not that big a deal. Kirk Cousins isn't going to be the quarterback in Atlanta. Obviously, Kirk Cousins isn't going to be the quarterback in Atlanta more than a year or two. Now, we know that. Now, they get him. But for a year or two, he's going to be there, and he's probably going to be great, like he always has been.
It's such a head-scratcher to me that you've got, you know, the Falcons have two, I mean, by all accounts, capable starting quarterbacks on their roster right now, And then the other example, at the very beginning of our segment, you bring up the Broncos going and getting their guy. I don't think they have any capable, viable starting quarterbacks in their quarterback room right now.
The Falcons love Penix. Love Penix. There's no question about that. Again, head scratcher, yes, I wouldn't have done it. I'm not saying like I like it. I'm just trying to understand why they did it. And they do it all the time. That's what the Falcons do. They love a player. They just go get him. That's what they did with Pitts. That's what they did with Bijan Robinson. I'm not sure that the return on either one of those players is good.
They did it. But they did it with Desmond Ridder. They went out and got Desmond Ridder for that. And like, look at where they are now.
So what I'm saying is maybe it shouldn't be a head scratcher because this is kind of what they do. Right, wrong, or indifferent. It's just that's the way they roll. At least the way they have in recent years. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. We're going to give, you know, basketball fans, stand by. We got some big transfer portal news today for both KU and K-State. We'll get into that in hour number two. We're going to come back, talk about Worthy specifically here for a minute, give our take on him as a player when we return on Sports Daily. Portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Maybe a good spot to go catch some of the draft this weekend. Pop into the little lounge there, belly up to the bar, watch a little NFL draft. Not too shabby. Might be what I'm doing while the kids are making squishmallows this weekend. All right, kids, have fun. That'll be over here for a little bit. See you when you're done. But we always appreciate Crestview's support. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you. And ask him about all the different ways you might be able to utilize the great facilities there. Tommy, let's talk about Xavier Worthy here for a couple of minutes in case we run out of time with all this college basketball news. I like the player. The fit is interesting. It's not a fit like to back up Rashee Rice by any means. So I think what we'll begin to see with the Chiefs is yet another evolution of this offense, right? Because Worthy, not only is Worthy not someone who steps in a Rashee Rice type role if he misses time or when he misses time, it's also not the kind of receiver, as we've wondered about, that potentially softens the blow of the loss of Travis Kelce. If you look at the way that the offense is currently constructed, what it does is give you, you know, some burners on the outside. You know, probably tells me that Hollywood Brown is not a longtime Chief, you know, play a couple of years and probably move on. But I do think it tells us that the offense will look just a little bit different than it has the past couple of years, probably a little more like it did in those Tyreek Hill years, maybe a little more explosive now than it has been.
You mentioned Tyreek Hill, and the first thing that I thought about is if you've got Xavier Worthy and you've got Hollywood Brown on opposite sides, you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle in Miami and you know how fast that offense is. And on top of that, I think an added benefit that we're not really talking about as much, look at how successful the Miami run game has become with the speed of the outside wide receivers that the Dolphins have. I think this is a great pickup for the production of Isaiah Pacheco. I think it's a great pickup for Travis Kelce being able to get a little bit more space underneath. Assuming that Rashee Rice is able to play at least a portion of the games this year, that's going to help him. I think overall, and I know that you mentioned earlier in the hour about how you're having a hard time wrapping your head around both Worthy and Brown taking the top off the defense. Yeah, it's a little confusing, but I do think that it enables the Chiefs to have a lot more separation underneath. And I think that we'll be able to see yards after catch numbers be pretty high for guys like Rice and Kelce when they're playing.
Hill and Waddle is a great comp. Hill and Waddle don't have Kelce and Rice sitting there with them either. Right. That's what's wild about it to me. And to me, this screams Travis Kelce is going to have a huge year. I think it's going to be an evolution. I think it will be different. I really do. I think it will be different than the offense we saw a couple years ago, and they'll just change it like they've done. They do need, though, you need time. You know, you need time to make that happen. And so left tackle, again, we talked about it, still remains critically important. But yeah, crossers, whatever, getting those guys with their speed in space is interesting. The one knock on Worthy has been he drops the ball too much, which is going to make Chiefs, you know, with Tony and Sky Moore, make you a little leery. They still have Tony and Sky Moore, and more so Tony than Sky Moore. but Tony's a ball after the catch guy. Everyone, you know, you see everybody just sort of laughing last night at, like, seriously, the Chiefs are going to get that guy? Because it is. Like, it's like, okay, come on now. Like, they're really, like, you're going to give the Chiefs the fastest guy in the draft, in the history of the draft, right? Like, come on. Like, what are we doing here? And they just, they executed it perfectly. They could see it coming a mile away. It's why we've liked for 2 or 3 weeks their possibility to move up in this draft, because everybody likes quarterback. And if everybody likes quarterback and you've got those other three receivers sitting there, boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen.
You know, and I think that, you know, probably outside of the very top three wide receivers that we all knew were going to go pretty early in Harrison, Neighbors, and Adunze, I mean, Worthy's probably number four. I guess Brian Thomas is up there too. So, you know, Worthy's probably in the top five, you know, so I think that
it got real muddy after the top three.
Yeah. So, but I do think, and you mentioned this, I agree with you. As soon as they drafted Worthy and knowing his skill set, to me, that screams, okay, Hollywood Brown is a rental. And it reminds me a lot
which
of
is okay.
potentially,
which
that's
is,
fine,
yeah.
But it reminds me a lot of what they did with Juju Smith-Schuster. And for Hollywood Brown, it's a way to get, not in the way that they play, but in the way that they brought him in, you know, for kind of a year-long deal to get back on the map and then be able to go get paid somewhere else. That's what Juju did, was able to parlay his 1 year in Kansas City to a decent contract with the Patriots. And I think Hollywood Brown, coming from the obscurity of the Arizona Cardinals, had lost a lot of his luster from when he broke into the league with the Ravens. He can play with the Chiefs now, and then he can go get paid somewhere else.
Yep, he can. And it may still be in Kansas City, right? If Worthy doesn't work out, you can still, because they'll know on Worthy pretty quickly. And they're going to, you know, Tony and all these other guys, they're going to be gone. So, yeah, it is. It's not a bad insurance plan. Assuming you lose Hollywood Brown because he has a great year and you can't afford him, to go get a guy who has a lot of the same skills. It's a smart pick. It's a smart pick.
That I'll say based off that pick is if Xavier Worthy can get on the field and be an impact player, and if Isaiah Pacheco can stay healthy, I think Isaiah Pacheco is a Pro Bowler this year, this upcoming season.
Yeah, he's.
I'm going to tell you that right now.
Isaiah Pacheco's not going to stay healthy. So they still need to consider that, but healthy enough, right? Like, it kind of the way they've done it. They just need him to be healthy by December, right? Be healthy in December. But he's not going to stay healthy. He's too violent a runner. But, you know, they'll limit his carries. They do need to think about running back, but maybe not in the draft, but just, you know, consider the position. By the way, no running backs taken. Not that this was a running back rich class. It was not. Not like last year. Last year was a running back heavy class, but They're basically all still out there. Take a tackle today, Chiefs. We're going to come back. We'll probably have more on the draft in the second hour, but we're going to start the second hour with transfer portal news. KU gets a big one. K-State gets an interesting one that I can give you maybe a little more insight on, because he played, and a lot of people I know watched him play for 4 years before he went on to Villanova. So we'll do that when we come back. Your calls on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. We'll get our HTO giveaway going here as we switch hours. Right now, first caller to the IHOP hotline gets free iced tea from HTO, a free coffee, free rain coffee from HTO. Good in Wichita East, West, or in Derby. Good luck, everyone. Get that call right now. Chad will get us a winner. Hour number two coming right up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.